Hello, welcome to Football Twaddle. My name is Saru and I have Baru with me. Baru, what's up?
What is up?
All right. So last week we did a Manchester United funky 11 and the best 11, whatever. The week before that, we did a Chelsea's best 11 under Roman Abramovich era, and we got a lot of stick for selecting Marcus Alonso as a left back and just ditching Ashley Cole because on moral grounds, that was the reason we gave. So, to redeem Ashley Cole's career and put him back in some sort of 11, we have Sidin Vatakut here with us. Hi, Sidin.
Hey, guys. What's up? Hello.
Yes, and we are going to talk about the best Arsenal 11 post the Invincible era. Yes, I think that's a fair enough reflection of good, interesting names to come out. And that's how, let's start with it. So, as the format goes, Sidin and Baru, is that choose your players' names. Don't worry about formation. Like, leave all those mundane things aside. If you choose 15 players, 16 players, we'll put enough on the bench to make it a squad. And if you have only 11, that's who we go with, right? And yep. How I would go ahead is I would probably like say a position, and I would just, since we are recording this on Zoom, I would request one of you guys to, like, I would say the name of the person, and then you guys can give your justification for the player you chose, right? So let's start with this. Sidin, goalkeeper. Mm-hmm.
So first of all, choosing the best Arsenal players after the Invincibles is a little bit like best vegetable biryani in Bombay. You're like,
But wait, is it even called vegetable biryani? I thought there's nothing called vegetable biryani.
Very good. Well done. Yes. Does a non-fictional thing even exist? No, anyway. So, fictional.
Like,
thing, fictional.
Like paneer.
Vegetable biryani falls in the forest. So for goalkeeper, choosing goalkeepers is, it's weird because there haven't been, I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but there haven't been particularly good Arsenal goalkeepers post-Invincibles. And it's a bit like, it's bad. But my choice is Wojciech Szczesny, if I have to choose one. Even though we still haven't seen how good Alexis Sanchez is in goal. 100% he's an amazing goalkeeper. But yeah, Wojciech. Smoking hot goalkeeper. Huh?
Did you consider the names of Petr Cech or Leno?
Yeah, I did. I prefer Szczesny. I've never liked Cech. Can I just tell you? Something about Cech that is... Yes. I don't like Cech.
I'll tell you what that is. He came from Chelsea.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of expectation when he came, and he was... I mean, if he wasn't Petr Cech and another goalkeeper performed exactly like him, he'd be like, eh, you know?
Yeah, that is true. I don't think he performed really well for Arsenal. Okay, you chose Szczesny, which is, correct. I mean, I love Szczesny. And Szczesny, like, as you said, I think before we started recording, that once he got rid of the Arsenal shirt, jersey, he became a much better goalkeeper just by that fact, right? Mm-hmm. Who has been the worst goalkeeper, according to you, post
David Ospina. Okay. I hated Ospina because, unfortunately, my watching Arsenal live a lot coincided with Ospina keeping goal for Arsenal a lot. And no man has inspired less confidence. Like, if Congress workers think Rahul Gandhi does not give you confidence. Dude, David Ospina in goal. Oh, it was so stressful, man.
Oh, and that's like, why we hired a good chant to like go along with him, no? So that to just balance it out.
Yeah. God, it was so bad. I hated that dude. And also it was disappointing, right? Because he seemed half functional in the World Cup.
What is half functional? He was supposed to be very functional, you're saying.
He was supposed to be instrumental in getting James Rodriguez to Arsenal or something.
Yes. But unfortunately, James Rodriguez did not come to Arsenal.
Yeah, so that didn't turn out well.
I did not like David Ospina. I thought Lukas Fabianski was really unlucky goalkeeper. He'd be like, wow, 5 steps forward, things are working out, and then he'd do some total howler right after that.
Yeah, but one thing about Fabianski I would say is, and I know you don't play fantasy football, but if you choose Fabianski in fantasy football, you probably have chosen the goalkeeper who gives you the most points through the season. He's gold in fantasy game. So I guess
I do play fantasy games, but just not football.
Oh God. All right. Baru, center back pairing. Just give two names, yeah. And if Sidin has to kick out one of your players because he's a guest, he can do that.
So I think Lauren Koscielny is definitely the first choice. And along with him, I'd probably choose Vermaelen or Mertesacker, one of these two, man. I'd actually go with Vermaelen because he had a more maverick, aura around him with the goal scoring up ahead. And Ines Dave is actually a pretty good defender, man. So Lauren Koscielny and Thomas Vermaelen for me.
I am so disappointed in you that you knew I like Per Mertesacker. Like, the and is this the reason you didn't choose Mertesacker?
No, wait. If I had to go according to what you liked, you would have put in Mustafi and Mertesacker, man. So let's not
get that. That probably would have been a cool pairing. They know they can't run. They know they don't have speed. At least you would have defended back and not conceded as many goals. Sidhin, you agree with this choice of Vermaelen and Lauren Koscielny?
Koscielny, definitely. Because, again, probably the best in that position, I think, post-Invincibles. I was really torn between Mertesacker and Vermaelen. Unfortunately, I've seen more of Mertesacker than I've seen of Vermaelen. I'm really cursed with seeing the worst of Arsenal. I was kind of leaning towards Vermaelen because somehow we actually made money by selling him to Barcelona. I have never understood that transaction. It is my only question that is ever asked on the Spanish football podcast. Why did Barcelona buy?
I think Sidlo answered that question, right?
Yeah. He said he's actually a good defender. That was his answer.
Oh, God, Sid. You not been to the Emirates Stadium then?
But my thing is like highly hashtag money laundering transaction. Anyway, but I really like Mertesacker because I was at Wembley when he did the famous FA Cup final.
Oh.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but he also played really well in the Community Shield after that, right? Didn't he also play that match?
Against Chelsea.
Yeah, the one against Chelsea that Arsenal won.
Yeah, I think that was kind of his swan song or something. And
he was actually quite good in that as well. I don't think he was crap in that.
Yeah, because I remember people telling Robbie after the match that, you know, why are we letting this guy go?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, whoa.
And I have great fondness for Mertesacker because he wasn't fast at all. He was the least physical tall person I've met in my life.
He's such a goody-two-shoes. Nice guy.
Okay, he's such a sweet guy, right? I mean, the worst central defender combination of personality and physique, right? But somehow he got things to happen, right? He just somehow...
I don't know if you've seen his Germany games. It was quite surprising why Arsenal bought him and there was such a big hype around him. He was quite bad for Germany as well. But he was reliable or consistent in what he does, which everyone knew, which was like 5 mistakes a game. But we know that these 5 will come at some point.
Yeah. And also one of those players that Wenger seemed to like, which was reasonably okay players, maybe a 7 out of 10, but leader.
Dude, he is a leader.
He's a good leader.
He had like 6 leaders in the 11, man.
Yes.
It's better than having 7 captains in the current era. So, whatever.
But I like Koscielny. Always had a habit of scoring very emotional goals and almost killing himself in the process of doing it.
Yeah, I think after Martin Skrtel, Koscielny had the most injuries while playing on the field.
Yeah.
And poor guy. I mean, the way his Arsenal career ended, it was quite sad the way he had to force his move out, and but it was quite good. He played quite well.
I remember when it started, like, when Koscielny and Skilacci and all these people came in, it was just a very weird, 1 year for me because suddenly there were all these new unpronounceable names that had come in, and I was like, what is this team? Is this even my Arsenal, man, the one that you've been following? And something, very similar feeling just happened like last year when suddenly you had like Martinelli and Sebalos and, all these people walking around in Arsenal kits, and you're like, what's happening again, man?
But maybe it's really weird.
Yeah, it's just really weird.
At least, Baru, they stayed for long enough at Arsenal. We may kick out a keeper's name. We are still learning to pronounce it at Chelsea. And he may go out by the end of the season. So by the time we can say Arrizabalaga, he's out.
Sounds like the capital of Ethiopia or something, man.
It's really satisfying name, no? Arrizabalaga.
Yeah. So they had the Chelsea...
Like Mendizorroza. It's satisfying.
The Chelsea Instagram page had...
It's got like one extra syllable than Jahan Baksh, which is high, so that's why it just feels better.
All right. Right back, Sidhin.
Sanya. Wasn't Sanya right back?
Yes, he was. He was a pretty good one as well.
Yeah, he's good right back.
Oh, dude, this is so easy. Like, the team writes its name on its own. Like,
that is because the team was bad, man.
Like the thing we did when we did the Manchester United one, we said left wing mein kaun hai, and then people realized only Giggs played there for 20 years under Fergie. So there's no other player to even take name of. So they said, yeah, you know, Nani can move from right to left probably. So is that the same situation with Sanya? He was there for 5-6 years, if I'm not wrong, right?
Yeah, Sanya was there for 7 years. I think the only other option, if you look at talent for that position, was Hector Bellerin. Because we have seen, like, at least this is something that is going to be so, you know, repeated in this podcast. Before his injury, that phase. So, you know, let's just shorten that to BHI. So, BHI, Bellerin was like top class. He was actually,
so good.
You know, the metric for analyze, you know, defining someone's value back then used to be that if Barcelona want him. And that is what Hector Bellerin was, VHI. And so I think he was a pretty good option. And apart from that, yeah, no one else really made the thing. We had a meme in that position, Ebue, but yeah, that didn't work out.
Oh.
Apart from the laughs, he didn't like really get much to us.
Yeah. Sidhin, what do you make of the whole situation at Arsenal where they thought Hector Bellerin can negotiate with the club for Ozil's wages?
I find that it's very unsavory. It's amazing how Arsenal will always do 90% of something correct, but the 10% they screw up will destroy everything. And invariably, Ozil will be involved in that 10%.
The risk to reward is very, like,
it's
the ratio
so
is
weird, Arsenal, man. And also, to be completely fair, I've been trying to avoid this whole thing partly because nothing else is happening. So media outlets need something to kind of keep amping up interest in the news. I have some sympathy for what Ozil says, but clearly the guy is being thrown under the bus right now. Like, yeah, he just cannot disagree with anything.
Definitely.
I mean, and he has a very abrasive management team from everything I've heard.
Oh, you should. I mean, I don't know if we should be promoting other podcasts, but Athletic has a podcast called the German Football Podcast, where they interviewed the agent of Mesut Ozil, and he goes and explains in quite a detail about what negotiations are taking place in the clubs and what are the pitfalls and everything. From whatever little I read, it looks like the clubs basically are taking players to take a haircut on their salary or defer salary, but Arsenal, I think, went ahead and told, for 3-4 months they wanted to take it, but Arsenal went ahead and told its players that you take a salary reduction for a period of 1 year or something of that sort.
12.5% cut for 1 year, I think.
Yeah, which is, okay, I mean, let's not get into how much they earn and everything, but it seems like that negotiation has to happen for longer than it can't just be resolved in one meeting.
And surprisingly, a lot of people fell in line with that, right?
Yeah, so it's not just the one meeting aspect of it. What Ozil was trying to push through, which I think his PR team or whatever haven't really been able to clarify properly. Currently, Ozil is one of those villains, you know, you're so rich, why can't you take a haircut kind of people right now. But what he was trying to push was, I want this on paper. You need to be a little more clear about how you're going to spend all of this money that you're getting from these pay cuts. Who is it going to go through? Is it going to go to charity? Is it going to go to support, you know, the staff at Arsenal? Which is what his questions was, and which is why he was stalling. He's saying, I will pay, you know, I'll take a cut much more than the proposed 12%. I'm the highest earner in this club. I'll take a much higher cut, but I just need things to be clear.
Yeah,
which is not the case when people are being...
It's a fair request to me. Which seems like a fair request to me.
Yeah.
And others have also come out in support, I think, separately, not in support. Like Roy Keane has said something similar. Wayne Rooney was one of the first voices out there in support of players not comfortable with taking a pay cut. So it's, again, you know, it's just about how the narrative is made.
Yeah,
and I think Wayne Rooney also talked about how the tax they pay on it, the tax differential alone might actually make it value neutral or value negative.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's
so not only just the players, but also it has like tax implications for the club itself, right? Which
correct.
People are not like really looking into right now.
Yes.
And it's and amazing,
plus, I think,
how billionaires are coming out as good guys in this whole thing.
No one's asking them. So a major point that I think everyone just forgets about when this whole discussion's about, you know, footballers so rich and all, is, you know, the shelf life of a footballer or the earning life, so to speak, which really does not get accounted when you're, you know, just arguing about pay cuts and stuff right now. Not everyone has a very, you know, well-backed financial plan for the future. You'll have people like, you know, I don't know, Dennis Rodman just away on drugs or something.
Dude, no, it's not just that. I mean, I'll just give one example before we get back to Steve. You know, Newcastle has those two brothers where they scored against Manchester United.
Yeah.
Right? One of the brothers, his salary per week in Newcastle is £800 a week, correct? And he's like, okay, he's giving away £400 in charity or whatever. I think it's a very skewed world where we live in, where we think all footballers are like millionaires, which is really not the case.
Yeah. And I think David Ornstein, in one of his earlier pieces on this whole thing, was talking about how the young players in Arsenal are particularly worried. Yeah, because a lot of them will lose a large population. They don't make a lot of money. B, they're afraid. I think to an extent, they're afraid that this will re-normalize the wages that they'll get in the future. Yeah. You know, on transfers and stuff like that. And how many of them are actually being bulldozed into accepting this because they didn't want to be seen as standing up to the older players.
The pressure on them is so enormous, man. The last thing on this, I mean, I don't think there's any pressure on a hedge fund owner or anyone right in the UK. No. The pressure on footballers is just crazy. Anyway, yeah, getting back to...
To support what Baru said very quickly, a couple of years ago, we'd commissioned an article on footballers' personal finances at Mint. And a friend of mine here who's a banker, he'd written a piece about, I think, something like 60% of all professional footballers are effectively bankrupt within 2 years of retiring. It's crazy, man. I mean, when you think about it. And his point was Championship, League One, League Two footballers actually end up having more stable finances than Premier League footballers because these guys are at insane debt. They've got large coteries that live off them, live beyond their... Terrible at handling money, has never had to handle money because they've joined the academy when they're young. Never had to manage their own money. Agents drop them like, you know.
Yeah, Neymar has to feed a village of 300 people or something. So, yeah. Getting back to the team. Baru, left back.
Left back, I think it's between either Clichy or Monreal. You know, Monreal is more recent in the memories and a little, I wouldn't say inconsistent, but it has to be one of these two, either Clichy or Monreal. And I'll go with, sorry?
Isn't Gail Clichy like the sun-dried Ashley Cole or something?
And I'll go with Gail Clichy because effectively, I mean, he was more consistent. He was a part of that really young and dynamic Arsenal side, which worked really well and got like pretty unlucky during that phase after the Invincible season. So yeah, I think I'll go with Clichy. Monreal was in a overall average side, so couldn't like really stand out also.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, I think for me, the choice was also between Clichy and Monreal. I'm very fond of Monreal. I'm fond of decent, hardworking footballers, but as long as they play for other teams, right? and not your own team. Like, I would love Monreal with all my heart. You have players like that, right? Nice players play for other teams. You know, they're nice people. You like them a lot. Like Benjamin Mendy, right? What a nice guy. You know, but you don't want them to play for your own team, right? I think we discussed this once a long time back. Clichy probably. Again, Monreal, very very hard to dislike. But man, what a complete beige player. No?
Who, Monreal?
Yeah. Like, I remember when James Richardson used to do the Guardian Football Weekly podcast, one of the questions that made me literally laugh out loud in a bus was when somebody called up and said, can we legally exchange Nacho Monreal for an actual bowl of nachos? And this was after a really bad match when he was completely outplayed. And I literally burst out laughing on a bus. And I'm probably on an anti-terror watch list somewhere in the UK because of that. But it was very funny. But again, one of those... You know, he left. Nobody cared when he left. Like, everyone was, oh my God, so sweet. 24 hours later, who is Nacho Monreal?
Oh, he left. I thought he was still in Arsenal and injured or something.
No. Exactly, Saru.
Exactly, right? Exactly. Yeah, Nacho Monreal. My God, look at a left wing and right wing, man.
I think the only other option we have over there is Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah.
Sorry, Gibbs.
Left back. Isn't Kieran Gibbs also left back?
Yeah, that was the joke, Saru.
Oh, I didn't hear. Your connection is so bad.
Oh man, I should switch to Gio.
Where is that dude? That dude was a right back, right? Hey, the guy who went to that British kid, the lifelong Arsenal fan. I completely forgot his name.
Jenkinson.
Jenkinson.
He was in West Ham, if I am not wrong, for some time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was right back, right?
Dude, no one cares.
Yeah, centre back, right back.
He's vaguely in the right. Would run very hard.
You and Debussy had come.
Yes.
And BHI. BHI Debussy was like so good. But he got injured and suddenly it's like he injured his head or something. I don't know what happened to him, man. It was became so bad. Exits Arsenal, so goes from BHI, he goes into played better in another shirt, 11.
Yeah.
And was he like in the team of the season or something?
In France.
Yeah. The next season, he was in the team of the season.
Yeah. Oh, that's so bizarre. Cool. By the way, guys, Carl Jenkinson now plays for Nottingham Forest.
Yes, yeah. Barry, you remember the famous photograph, right? Project Youth.
Oh, with your Henry Lansbury and everyone in it.
Yeah, so, no, the one with Gibbs.
For the next generation.
Gibbs, Jenkinson. Was it Wiltshire? There's one photo with all of them signing together, if I remember. Anyway.
The five in a row sitting
in... Yeah, five in a row. Project Youth.
Walcott had renewed his thing. I think Ramsey was a part of that. I remember the generation before that, when these guys were all still in the youth. So, Wiltshire, Henry Lansbury...
And but this is after David Bentley, right? This is after Bentley.
Two seasons or three seasons after Bentley. Yeah. And Nico Yenares, you know,
Nico
all of these guys.
Nico Yenares.
Like, Ozan, Ozyakub, all of these guys are like just set for the future. And everyone's like, bro, we are, you know, this is the future. We're still waiting for that.
My God. Every once in a while, I go down this rabbit hole of what happened to them browsing.
Where is Sanchez? What now?
Yeah,
where is Sanchez? Blasters.
That's sad. Nico Yenares, my God, so exciting. Remember when we met at London Colney? We all lost our shit because we saw Gideon Zelalem walking by.
Yeah. Zelalem looks like a proper Ethiopian marathoner, man.
Yeah. Where is he now? America, no?
Yeah, he MLS, is American. Right? He is American.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure which club is he in right now.
MLS.
Why would he go to the MLS though? Like, it sounds too soon. Like,
I have no idea.
Dude, it's not about being soon or not. It's about finding happiness in life and not being abused day in and day out. So if you
yeah, he's with New York City FC right now.
Good life, why not?
And New York City is a good club.
German-born American professional.
Yes. And there was then, in fact, briefly, I think there's a whole argument. Will he play for America? Will he play for Germany? Can he play for the UK?
And now he plays for no one.
Sounds like such a Zaha argument, man.
Nah. All right. So midfield. Let's go.
Dude,
with
how many midfielders?
So let me put it this way. Why don't both of you just give your list of midfielders? Because I don't even want to choose 2, 3, 4, whatever. I'm assuming all of you have only one striker in mind, both of you. So just fill your midfield in and then we can talk about that one, those midfields. So Sizin, why don't you just give the midfielders if Baru has to chime in, he will.
So I have six of them. I have Ozil, Ramsey, Arteta, Fabregas, Sanchez and Santi Cazorla.
Dude, what a midfield. Oh my God, just thinking about it.
Yeah, very exciting. You will not win anything.
Come on.
No, I'm being unfair. I'm being unfair. Sanchez alone could win every tournament in the world if he wanted to.
But that's what Jose thought.
Dude, what a... Anyway, let's not get into that. Baru, yours?
I think I'd probably add someone like... Because this is a very forward-facing thing, man. I mean, it needs someone like a Flamini or a... You know, a Diaby, probably someone to just anchor it, you know, at the back also. So, probably Diaby or, again, Diaby BHI. Diaby, you know, probably Diaby or Flamini, you know. I'll use one of these guys over there. I really want to keep Rozeski somewhere inside because Rozeski and Cazorla are like my all-time.
Wait, but... To be really fair, Rozeski was injured like 80% of his Arsenal career.
I know, so he's probably still 25 in footballing terms, right?
No, he's not.
He said that on his own, remember?
He's a reverse dog.
Exactly. So yeah, one of these guys, I mean, you'll have to, you know, choose. I wouldn't take Arteta, but Diaby at his peak, either Diaby, because he was like a like-for-like Vieira replacement mentally. Not couldn't size up physically.
Yeah, yeah.
We all led Flamini, you know, one of those guys, man. I mean, they were kind of, got the kind of, you know, that bite into that midfield. Remember that 2008, 2009 side? Eduardo BHI?
So. Oh, God. But one thing I would say about Flamini is that, you know, we find a lot of Arsenal players who, after they leave Arsenal, play better. Flamini just became worse. He became probably a good venture capitalist, but he became worse as a footballer. So
he became richer.
Yeah, so. He became rich and bad.
Yeah, and that's an interesting topic for an episode itself. A player who kind of go out of a system and just completely lose everything, lose their mojo.
You can say the same thing for Leb, but statistically, like if you look at the trophies he won, it does not paint the same picture. He won like the sextuple sitting on the bench at Barca. So,
but, I mean, genuinely, Baru, when you look at that midfield and somebody told you, okay, these are six people, seven people who've played in the midfield for one club in one period, you'd be like, show me the trophies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, at least show the community shield, if not anything. Dude, I mean, the names you said, Sidan, you're looking at Arteta, Carzola, Ozil, what did you
Ramsey.
Say, Sanchez, and Ramsey. Come on, that's...
Dude.
And yeah, Fabregas, dude. Fabregas is actually like the first midfielder who should be in this side.
Oh, so have you forgiven Fabregas?
It's not about forgiving, man. It's just that that guy, at the end of the day, he was Arsenal DNA, man. I mean, he enters Chelsea and the first thing he does is like, you know, glint of what he did at Arsenal. So you guys like, because that was normal for us. Chelsea fans still they talk about like, oh, wow, what a pass.
Okay, so what's your point?
My point is that he was like, he had the capability to be the next, probably Mr. Arsenal, if I had to, you know, give a word name to it. But it just didn't turn out. But talent-wise, he's still, the, you know, one of the best players to ever play for Arsenal.
Also, in some sense, a lead indicator of what Arsenal was going to become, right? Which is always a club that had one or two good people, but just not enough people to win anything.
True, yeah.
And
yeah,
that's that loop. That's a decade-long loop that I think the club was stuck in.
Because we had all of these players, man, like Wilshere, Ramsey, okay, he did break out. He was, I think, our player of the season for 2 years in a row or something. Ramsey was amazing. Ozil, on his day,
if
Giroud played a little better in the 15-16 season, Ozil would probably have made an assist record, which would have been quite unbeatable for quite a long time.
And truly a player who TV does not do justice to, Mesut Ozil? I've never seen a player, like you see, like very rarely, right? I see a match live and then I see it recorded. And completely different. Ozil is a completely different player on live.
Absolutely.
I think
Kumar and Saru noticed at the World Cup. And I noticed when we had gone for that Chelsea match at the Emirates.
Yeah.
That is the first time I saw him, like, you know, just move, you know, just gliding into the right position at the right time. And, you know, the ball would just be there.
Yeah, and his ability to stretch the back line, reshape their defense, just wonderful.
So smart, man.
So good, yeah.
Saru, I mean, you want to talk about what he did in France, in Russia, right?
In Russia, oh my God. It, like you say, so true, Susan. TV just does not do justice to Ozil. Like how TV does not do justice to the entire sport of tennis, right? It does not do justice to Ozil. And what we saw in the World Cup was the amount of space he creates. It's for other players. It's unbelievable. That was the first time Kumar and I actually saw Ozil play. He ended up the game as a defensive midfielder. So no one could even complain about the work rate.
But if you talk about TV, I think the one way, if you focus, the one way you realize that Ozil's actually putting quite a shift in every match is he's more often than not, he's in the top two, top three people in distance covered every game.
Yeah, but no, I think what people mean is that, you know, they don't want someone looking lazy and running.
Yeah, he's not visibly, you know, running around like, so Alexis Sanchez is the complete opposite. That guy, if he's standing, if Sanchez is stationary and standing, it looks like he's making an effort.
Yeah.
That was the aura around Alexis Sanchez.
And they were such an interesting pair, right? They were such a great pair together.
Absolutely, man.
It's so enjoyable. I mean, you had this guy who was great at creating space and enabled other people's intelligence, but that means you needed to have other intelligent players.
Yeah.
And Sanchez was the guy who had the intelligence to make quick decisions and the pace to do it, right?
Yeah.
Unbelievable guy. Unbelievable. Like ankle-breaking player.
Yeah, before we get to about why Sidney chose Arteta, one thing about Ozil is I think a Real Madrid teammate of his, when Jose was managing, I think he said this in an interview after, he said in halftime, if we were losing or something of that sort, in the 10-minute break we have in the halftime, the team would get instructions for like 3 minutes and then Jose would speak to Ozil for 7 minutes on how basically to create space for everyone else. And he had the most complicated instructions to follow. And he used to do that to perfection according to them. And that's why I think Cristiano started scoring that many goals as well. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, there's no one else who's so visibly frustrated when he has to play with idiots, right?
Yeah. That's true.
He's so visibly frustrated. And it's not like the strikers who make, like you see Lacazette. Like Lacazette is always disappointed, right? He's running, nobody's passing to him, he's running back. Constantly this happens. Mm. Aubameyang is fine because Aubameyang is just used to that disappointment because he's running a million times in a match. Ozil, you can just see him, he'll run, throw his head back and run back. How many times?
That's true.
And because he's like a chess player who's stuck in a football team, He's mm-hmm. an individual sports person who somehow learned to play a team sport.
Oh, he's like Yuzvendra Chahal. Is that what you're saying?
His parents even told him desperately, this is not a name that is good for a team sport. Please play a solo game. Anyway, go on. You're asking something.
Why did you pick Arteta?
I thought one of those, the glue in the middle type of players, when you had all these audacious guys, the kind who kind of brought a little bit of a stability player in the center. Yeah. But again, very much colored by recent events. Huh? I must be honest with you, right?
Recent events of managing the team.
Yeah, managing the team. And you kind of then start building a backstory that actually did not exist.
Yeah, he just endears himself to you a little more, right?
Yes.
So I think Arteta, I think that's the same logic that I mentioned earlier with Diaby and Arteta.
Yes.
You just need that anchor. Otherwise, it's just a huge team. This actually worked pretty well with Wilshere in that position against Barcelona. When we had Ashwin, I think, with the winner.
Dude, I saw the highlights of the 2-1 game at Emirates just yesterday when Ashwin scores in the 85th or 86th minute, something like that.
Oh. Pass from Sami Nasri. So two names which we actually didn't talk about. Nasri and Ashwin. So pretty interesting players, man. I mean, that team was something. And Ashwin, what a character, yeah. Like, what a joyful character, man. I mean, I really miss that guy. He was like he and Podolski were like these
happy people.
Remember, happy
people, man.
With Cazorla as their head. It was like this small tribe that they had in Arsenal.
Yes.
Oh. Like happy FC or something.
Santi Cazorla, dude. I mean, like, what a guy, man. Like,
and
to this day.
In that,
huh?
When he walked in at the hospitality box after the match.
Oh, mate.
He couldn't stop smiling, man. Like, Bellerin came in and he had like these airs about him, you know, chilling and acting with all swagger and everything. But Cazorla was so down to earth and just smiling and exuding, you know, positivity. And what a player, man.
Like, for me, that free kick against Hull is one of my great Arsenal memories. Because I thought, boss, this is gone. You know, this is it. The stadium is built on some burial ground. It is bloody Munglik.
Oh, man.
But that and the thing is, and his celebration is so like, okay, you know, this is phase one in a three-phase comeback. What a great player, man. No one turns with a football like Santi Cazorla could turn with a football. Huh?
Yep.
Low center of gravity.
Yeah.
Something is going to happen. What is going to happen?
I don't think there's one person on earth who hates Santi Cazorla.
No.
Everyone just loves him.
Yeah.
One question.
But you know, right? The couple of people who actually hated Cazorla.
What?
And I'm just saying the set of people who hated him, and then he got injured and, you know, hurt, tore his Achilles and, you know, tendon and everything. Yeah, even they started loving him. Then they're like, "Arey yaar, bichare ke saath ye bhi ho gaya." He had to cut his daughter's name out of his arm and put it into his feet. So now there's actually zero people. Like,
Baru, I mean, if anyone who gets injured that badly and had to go through what he did and people still hate him for it, I don't think you should be friends with such guys. They're not very good people, man.
I'm just saying, now there are zero people, man.
Well, Sidin, a question for you before we move to the forward. Why is a very rich club like Arsenal, why couldn't they afford two people in 300,000 per week salary bracket? I didn't know that their financial situation was that bad that it was either Ozil or Sanchez. Why even make that choice?
This comes to my. In fact, now I will spoil it. My actual most valuable player for Arsenal in the post-invincible era is whoever managed to make this club have won a top five, top 10 income during a period in which it won exactly as Bishwa Kalyan Rath would say, it won tatti. Genuinely, I don't think people understand the gravity of their achievement. It was by far the richest unsuccessful sporting entity in the world.
Yeah, which is quite surprising.
It is unbelievable how much money they made without winning anything.
Oh, but
like Anna Kournikova and then Arsenal, right?
Wait, but there's an argument.
But Anna got like, she won contracts in NDK's music videos, right? So
yeah, okay, I mean, yes. And our music videos were not particularly very good.
But Enrique didn't like stick around.
There's an argument to be made that Arsenal's commercial team, to use your words or Biswas' words, is tatty. that a club monetizes things so badly that a club which could have been richer is still not that rich, and they're quite poor still.
You know, this is a conversation I think I've had with Baru before, maybe even with you, Saru. Is Arsenal was very unlucky, right? Arsenal invested in things like a training ground and a modern stadium and so on at a period when it thought that this would be a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
And immediately it had all this foreign money coming in. And within like 5 years, this was, nobody cared. This was meaningless. None of these things. So I think the great tragedy is Wenger came in and took it to a different level. But then by the time he went back, that advantage is gone. Arsenal is just... So Arsenal of pre-Wenger to... You know what I mean? The relative position of Arsenal in the league is unchanged.
Yeah.
It does not make more money than other clubs. It does not have infrastructure that is substantially better than many other clubs have. None of those things. He actually left a club relatively in exactly the position it was.
Which is quite sad given what...
It's really sad. Really sad. Well, like, simply because they wouldn't invest when they should have.
Yeah, before we get to the striker, you said MVP is whoever, right? So there must be a name to this, assigned to this person, right? Or there's no name assigned.
I mean, how long has Vinay Venkatesham been around?
Let's just blame him, man.
He has been around for quite a while, actually.
I'm always in favor of blaming the Tamilian if something goes wrong. So I'm on board. With
as a Kannadiga, I will say yes.
The single-handedly going to spawn a whole bunch of Tamil Arsenal podcasts.
Vinay is going to ask, can I get a glass of water? And Sarah's going to be like, no.
I have.
No, you should take it close to him and then take it back. Oh, man.
So, yeah,
but yeah, what an achievement. I genuinely, one of the great sporting achievements.
Is to be as rich as Arsenal is winning Scant.
Yes. And also... A club that soaps. Like, how many other clubs even care for debt right now? It all looks stupid today, right? The obsession with servicing debt, with with keeping money around, with managing wage bills, with the day Wenger said fourth place is like a trophy, is when we essentially shot ourselves in the foot.
Yes. One thing, isn't Tottenham earning way more money than Arsenal in terms of revenue?
Yeah, now they are.
Yeah.
Right? So, to answer your point, Sidhin, I mean, I take everything you're saying, but if you want a lesser, more unsuccessful club with more revenue, there you have it. That's Tottenham. Yeah. Tottenham beat Arsenal in that as well.
Yes. Yes. Crazy, right?
Oh, crazy. God.
No, but actually, like, the entire point of that guy being the MVP, I mean, it's true. I mean, Arsenal were pretty well-placed financially, even though they put a lot of focus onto debt servicing, servicing the debt much more than required at that point. Where they went wrong was getting into these really long commercial deals and not renegotiating them. And that is where all these other clubs actually moved ahead. United reached a phase where they stopped winning. Even then, whatever commercial deals they were, renegotiating, it was going at like a 4x, 5x multiple. And Arsenal was just adding a couple of million to
the Emirates Stadium deal, I think, was a 15-year deal for 100 million. Something like that. But that 100 mil was upfront payment in 2005 or 6. So imagine.
It looked like genius at that point because no one is expecting this waterfall of money going to come into the Premier League later, right?
Yeah.
You're still roughly assuming that it's going to be a 3-horse race or 4-horse race between the top 2-3 clubs.
I think match day revenue wise, which was something they wanted to unlock, actually worked out for them because I think currently Arsenal are second or third in the league. Second, I think, in the league when it comes to match day revenues. But what they, as Sidhin pointed out earlier, was that they could just not see that, the Russian money and all of these things coming in. All these plans were already in place and they had to move ahead with it. Let's see how it turns out for Tottenham, actually. I mean, they already know this new old normal is. Let's see how they, tackle the entire thing because they have put in similar amounts of money into their new stadium.
Yeah, but for whatever it's worth, I think Daniel Levy is a much shrewder and much smarter person and...
Than Gazidis was.
Yeah, I think Daniel Levy is probably one of the best football executives around the world. So yes, there was a.
But also, just there's one final point on this whole finance thing. This also came at a time when player valuations exploded.
Yeah.
And we've discussed this once before, right? I mean, you either buy the players for the system you have, or you change the system to the players you can afford. Yeah. And Arsenal did neither of those things. It kind of kept playing this. We need really smart leadership player system. When they couldn't afford any of the world's best leadership type footballers. And by the time, and then when Emery came, and you know, it's just, we still haven't solved that problem. We still don't have a system player match, which is something that, for example, Liverpool really worked out through, Klopp's period, right? And that is really important.
Man.
Yeah, I think even Swiss Ramble actually just gave a one-pager today, Saru, was it?
Huh.
Detailing like all the top six clubs at least.
And
they're so awesome in there, so I'm sure it's top six. you know, just putting all, summarizing their entire thing and their relative rankings when it comes to match day revenue and all of this. You should check that out. I think he just put it today.
Sizin, would you have been happy if the Saudis had bought Arsenal?
No, man. I mean, it's no, man. Because I'll tell you why, right? And this is
such
probably,
a would you like Mourinho to manage your question, man?
Yeah, correct, right? Because, and again, Bauri, you should correct me on this. I feel that there is an element of Arsenal fandom, partly because of not winning stuff, that is deeply morals and ethics based.
Hmm.
There's a moral streak to a lot of Arsenal support that, you know, oh, great form of football, good for the community, very North London, you know. These are all intangibles. A trophy is tangible. Money is tangible. These are all intangibles. And I think for a while, this will keep going on. We'll still be a morals and values-based club. Eventually, their patience will run out and we'll just beg for someone to come and buy us out. But I still feel there is this whole streak that, you know, we should be owned by good people. Not like we're owned by Mother Teresa right now, but still.
Yeah, I mean, it's all relative, right? And come on. No one can accuse Stan Kroenke of being what the Saudis are, so.
Yes, yes. As far as we know.
Oh, God. I'm just so happy that Roman Abramovich is like the fifth worst owner or something. In terms of morals.
Yeah, no, I mean, tomorrow the Saudi Arabia will come and buy the Premier League, boss. I mean, who knows, right?
Oh, dude. Yeah, it's such a slippery slope. Will we stop watching Premier League? I wouldn't. I would continue watching it still. So,
see, the Russians are already working on continental football. So, I think one of the other oil powers has to make an inroad from somewhere else. Gazprom is everywhere in Europe, man.
Dude. I mean, to be fair, I mean, this is a very historical viewpoint. But if you look historically back at all of these clubs, they were all owned by British oligarchs in some form or the other.
Correct.
Right. I mean, I remember reading in some millionaire Fulham guy many, many decades, maybe centuries ago. Not centuries, but decades ago, had to bail out Arsenal at some point because Arsenal was on the verge of bankruptcy or something.
This was like Bayern bailing out Dortmund in 2005.
Yes, but no one remembers. But you know, you can't say, look, we want five Ozils to play and also wanted to be this community-owned cooperative. You know, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And is there a cheap way of winning football?
No.
Sustainably, no. I can't think of it. I mean,
cheap way, probably if you give it 5-6 years and are able to hold on to the players you develop, which I think the only opinion I have on Arsenal is that if they had held on to enough players or found a way for them to just stay at the club, probably there would have been one Premier League somewhere in between before Wenger retired.
This whole timing of buying and selling is a complete conversation on Arsenal that has to be done.
All right. Let's not do that. Let's just choose a striker.
Van Persie.
Come on. That guy is... Baru, who's the biggest snake? Fabregas or Van Persie?
Well, you mean in terms of letters, no? Van Persie, I mean, Fabregas, right? Still a legendary player, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think I'll go with Van Persie, man.
As what? As a striker or a snake?
Snake.
Oh, man.
It was, you know, the entire exit, it was evident that Arsenal were getting closer, you know, to the title and probably just needed one or two other players. And I understand the whole thing about him saying that his demands were not being met in the club. He wasn't getting, you know, a voice within the club. The only voice he could hear was the little boy inside him. So, but the entire thing about, you know, joining your rivals or something, at least Fabregas took a detour. And even when he came back, he did apparently want to join Arsenal and Wenger was the one who shut the door on him. But I think I'll go with Van Persie as the biggest snake. But that is not the question over here.
So you asked biggest snake.
Yeah, so...
Oh, sorry, I thought biggest name. Anyway, yeah, go on, yeah. No, Van Persie, right? Not striker. Biggest,
yeah. Would you... No, also,
I mean... Sidney thought we were discussing a bigger name.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
No, we... Snake.
Snake. No, Van Persie, definitely. My God.
All right. Baru, would you like to say
Giroud? Again, tragically for me, this happened just as I moved next to the Arsenal.
I think, Sizin, you should just move out of London. It would do world of good for Arsenal, probably.
Yeah, my God. Yeah, but oddly enough, I think Giroud and Van Persie was roughly on track, right? For first 100 goals after X number of matches or something.
Yeah.
I think they were almost exactly on track.
I think Giroud actually had, he was ahead actually. Because if he had scored even a goal every two games, like from the time he left, he would have equaled Van Persie's record.
Yeah, but
I think that is more or less what it was.
Giroud is so good looking. I mean, I'm quite sad that none of you guys even thought that as to be a factor in your team.
No, I haven't responded yet.
So, still a very good looking team.
Coming.
All right.
So, I think Giroud was, like, even Henri had said that, like, Giroud was actually one of the players he would have loved to play along with, you know, because as a striker, you'd love it if someone can unlock your movement. And that is exactly what Giroud would do for people who used to play around him up front. They've been really beautiful goals that Giroud has been a part of, especially, I mean, talking about the most beautiful one that we have seen is Wilshere versus Norwich. And that was basically Giroud and Cazorla, you know, orchestrating the entire thing. If you look at Giroud, how he plays, you know, his first touches up ahead, I don't know, it's probably like a new position, man, like a holding forward or something that he really slotted into, because he actually ensured that people around him were able to score goals when. I think one thing which is extremely, which I've always noticed when we've seen probably like Lacazette up front as opposed to Giroud up front in the center, is that Giroud used to win every aerial ball. You know, if someone knocks a ball up ahead, lobs it up ahead, Giroud will always win that ball. This is not something that happens anymore for Arsenal. Lacazette misses, you know, loses more balls than wins, actually.
I
would love to have Giroud actually in that team, not as an out-and-out striker, but definitely as someone, you know, a little behind, like a false nine, somewhere over there to unlock everyone around him. Brilliant player, man. I mean, I just think people don't really realize how gorgeous his game was. People are just too focused on his looks, man.
I know.
Amazing player, right? I mean, I used to like really two things about him a lot. Three things. He looks amazing, number one. But his, he was like, you know, they call a lot of forwards holding players, right? They call it's a brand. He was genuinely great at holding the ball.
Yeah.
Like, it was almost comedic, right? You would burst out laughing at how well he would hold the ball, waiting for everyone else to catch up. With his, the whole thing where he'd keep the ball back to goal, and if nothing is happening, he would keep it so long, somebody would foul him. That he was so good at it. And you'd see other players learning it from him. The number of young Arsenal players who would do the same thing. Back to goal, keep the ball, wait for other people to come, and get fouled in the process. He was so good at that. And the other thing is, he was always seen as this very old-fashioned poacher. But he had this knack for knowing when people were going to do creative things, right? You'd always see that in him. And I remember the score. I don't remember who it was. Where Ozil was in the circle. High ball comes in. And Ozil kind of flicks it behind without looking.
Yeah.
And Giroud runs, gets the ball. Doesn't have a lot of pace, but manages to get a goal. Do you remember which match that was against?
West Ham, I think. I think it was West Ham. And he actually fluffed it first.
Yes.
And then he managed to finish it. Because you're like, oh, what a ball from Ozil.
Yes, yes.
And then Giroud gets it and you're just so excited. And then he fluffs it. Like, and you're like, no, man, not again.
And you'd see him.
He manages to finish it.
You know, and all these little flicks. Or, you know, there's a clever little plays by Ozil and even Sanchez and the other plays. You'd sometimes see that he's read it, but he doesn't have the pace to get there.
I see this so often. He used to also be one of those players who would get those flicks going, man. I mean,
yes. Very good player. Really nice player.
Mentally, I think he was a really intelligent player. The only reason to probably not, you know, choose him consistently in an Arsenal 11 would be how he actually let Ozil down in the 15-16 season, where we could easily like scored a million, you know, millions of goals, but started the season so well and then just, you know, tapered off completely. But yeah, that was just, yeah, that's that, I think.
Very, very good player. Likeable player. Used to enjoy watching him very much. Again, a real nice player to watch live.
Yeah.
One of those clever players who are 8 on 10 on everything. So they have to be smart in the way they play. Nice player to watch.
Cool. Sidhin, your honorable mentions. Jaldi.
Walcott and Wilshere.
Oh, God. Walcott, Wilshere.
Like sometimes you used to feel in the audience that you're putting in more effort than Walcott at wanting him to win.
Yeah, now Evertonians feel that.
You know, you're like, run! Like, Walcott, do something!
But Walcott like you, runs pretty quick, no? I mean,
used to. I remember that.
Was his also BHI?
No. Well, actually, yeah. Because his BHI was very visual. Being stretched off against 2-0 up at Tottenham. Sorry, at Arsenal, but against Tottenham. And you know, he had held up the 2-0 thing on his hands, and I think that was the beginning of the end of his pace for him. Because oh my god, Walcott, when he unintended, but when he burst onto the scene, my god, I think he was consistently one of the fastest guys on FIFA also before it got replaced by Hector Bellerin. But Walcott was something else when he was a kid, man. I remember especially that that loss to Liverpool, was it? In the Champions League semis, maybe. Arsenal lost, I think, 3-4 or 3-5. And this was the equalizer for the third goal. Liverpool was attacking at Arsenal's end. Walcott gets the ball somewhere off the edge of RD. Runs across the pitch. Cuts, you know, like, I think four defenders or something. Takes it to the edge, like full Gervinho style. Takes it to the byline. And then just cuts in across for, I think, Adebayor, was it? And goal, you know, Arsenal are like, level on terms, and then we lose the match anyway. I think it was Dirk Kuyt or someone who managed to win it for them. But yeah, that was Walcott in a nutshell, man. And he's always had these, you know, these, somebody just mentioned this on one of our groups the other day, like a highlight reel player. I think it was Kant or somebody.
Yes.
A highlight reel player, because remember that goal against Newcastle? He's falling, and mid-fall, he just comes back up and cuts to three players and then chips the keeper.
Yeah.
And that chip was especially, you know, especially nice because it was against Tim Krul, and I don't like that guy.
What has Tim Krul done to you now? Anyway, let's not get into it. We need to like...
He looks like a villain in an old Bruce Lee movie. No?
he had a fight with Van Persie once when we used to like Van Persie. So since then I've just never liked him. And the second Walcott, the third Walcott goal I really remember was the one against Chelsea. Again, I think it was a 2-2-3-3 match before Arsenal just won it with a Van Persie hat-trick, I think it was, or a Walcott hat-trick. Ramsey and Walcott are doing a 1-2 thing, and Walcott just falls, you know, trips over the ball or falls or something, and Ramsey just throws his hands up in the air. He's like, what is this guy, man? Like, why can't he just play properly with me? Even the Chelsea guys just take a step and, you know, like, drop their shoulders, like, okay, it's done. But in that same move, again, he gets up, goes through, and boom, near post against Peter Cech. And that was such a good goal, man. It just showed you, like, how good and tenacious this guy was. But then, yeah, injuries again. I think let's just stop on the injuries excuse. But, yeah, I really expected much more from Walcott and Iwobi at a club like Everton, man.
Iwobi. Yeah. You know, amazing how he didn't say anything about Ramsey or Sanchez, right? He spent no airtime on those two guys.
Yeah, but when you're talking about Ozil, Carzola and all of them, come on.
But still, Sanchez, man. My God, that guy could electrify you. Huh?
Did you watch him live?
Yeah, that's true. I think Ramsey was just Mr. Right in everything he did, man. Like, he was one of the guys who actually improved.
After the injury.
Yes.
So, he took his time to fit in. I remember his first goal back was against Manchester United. Edge of the box, shot. But, yeah. There's really not much you can say about Ramsey, man. I think he was just right in everything he did, except signing for Juventus.
He'll come back. Don't worry. Arsenal will make money on that transfer.
What, it's going to be like a Pogba thing, is it?
I think Ramsey will pay us to want to come back.
And finally, my one, I have to put in this. Another one of my favorite Arsenal memories, in addition to Cazorla's free kick, is Shea Given sitting on the floor and smiling after Alexis Sanchez's thunder bastard of a goal in the FA Cup final. Do you guys remember?
I remember that.
The guy smashes the ball. It hits the bar, goes in, and Shea Given just sits there on the floor and he's like, "What do I do? Like, what can a human being do?"
Oh, man.
Normal. This was when, what's his name, was managing Aston Villa. Tim Sherwood.
What a cool guy.
Yeah. So, Walcott and Wilshere, obviously. Wilshere, I mean, again, you know, electrifying guy, but what to do?
Yeah.
The guy who scored against, I think, either Galatasaray or Fenerbahce. long range screamer. Was it Ramsey? Like he jabbed it, you know, like jabbed it downwards and goes like screaming into the top left corner. It was either Oxlade-Chamberlain or Aaron Ramsey, man. I think that was one of the best goals I've seen from an Arsenal midfielder, man.
All right.
I'll probably share it on our Twitter account
please,
later.
Please do, Baru. We are like now running over time here. So last two questions. Thanks for the team season. The first question to you is, which player do you think should not have got injured as much as he did in Arsenal? And you probably would have seen his true potential if he did not get that many injuries.
Oh my God. Again, so many BHIs.
Choose one.
Diaby, right?
Absolutely.
Not that many injuries, but you always wonder what if.
Quite a few injuries. Yeah. There's actually a chart of both his and Jack Wilshere's where every part of their body has been like highlighted. Yeah, ye injured hua hai mere bhai.
Diaby is the great what if, right? You agree, right?
Absolutely. Diaby was a good player as well. Poor guy.
It's Diaby through and through. Honorary mention. Although we have seen that even after fitness, he's actually, it was just our dream. Jack Wilshere. But yeah, Diaby through and through. Because we actually didn't get to see much of him.
Yes. Tragedy. Oh,
nine threes ho gaya. Jack Wilshere ka toh abhi wo fairy tale khatam ho gaya na. Abhi dekh rahe kaisa khel.
Abhi khatam ho gaya. And Baru, the last question on this pod to you is, since the invincible season, which is the Arsenal team or which year's Arsenal team you thought at the beginning of the season had the chance to win the league?
I think 2008-2009, the season where Eduardo got injured.
Oh, where he broke his leg, that one?
Yeah, so that was the season Arsenal was on track to win the league. Like, absolutely. I mean, I think if you look at the graph as the season progressed, either 2008-2009 or 11-12, one of these two seasons, Arsenal was so close to winning the league. But I'll go with the 08-09 one with Aaron Ramsey's Eduardo's injury. Was Aaron Ramsey also the same season?
I don't think so.
Don't think so.
Anyway, because that entire new crop of players, everyone matured together, everyone fit in properly. Lev, Flamini, Clichy, Sanya, Fabregas, you had, I think, Van Persie, once in a while, he'd be off from injury and he'd play. Eduardo hitting, you know, amazing form. That team was like the next-gen Arsenal team, man, which actually was really close to winning a title. And that injury happened. And, you know, I think that changed the course of Arsenal's future from there. It destroyed the confidence. It destroyed, that momentum which they had. And Arsenal, honestly, it just hasn't recovered since then.
And Arsenal always seems to... This happens cyclically, right, Baru? In the sense, there'll always be this moment in the season when everyone is like, could this happen? And there'll be this very demoralizing point, and the club spends so much time getting its confidence back, the season is gone.
Yeah, so I'd actually like zoom out a little more from that. That cycle is actually longer than that. But every time we've reached fruition for that cycle, something wrong has happened to the club.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
bad luck is not completely, answering that question. But yeah, bad luck was a huge component.
You need bastards in a team sometimes.
Yeah, we should ask someone like Joey Barton or someone.
Yeah.
Dude, not that big a bastard also.
medium bastard.
Didn't he actually affect Arsenal's season for a bit because of that Abu Dhabi red card? He got Abu Dhabi a red card.
Joey Barton.
Yeah. I'll look into it and like probably text you later or something. But that was change the season's flow.
All right.
But yeah, my answer is the Eduardo season.
All right. Sidhin, thanks a lot for spending so much time.
No problem, man. Always happy to help.
This was such a fun chat. And hopefully for all your stadium visits and everything, you will see a good Arsenal trophy win or something in the stadium. And you will live the day to say, I was in the stadium that day.
For that concert.
Coldplay yet again.
Coldplay.
I think Sidhin's luck is so bad that he may go for a Justin Bieber concert at the Emirates.
No, but genuinely, dude, they've only ever lost once when I was in the stadium to Östersund. Okay? Only once. Right? They've actually really played well when I'm there, but they never bloody win anything. But anyway, let's see.
All right. And Baru, see you next week.
All right.
Take care, guys. All the best. Take care. Cannot wait for the season to come back. Take care.
Yes, thank you, Lord Sidhin. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.